You're listening to Builderpedia, your go-to podcast for everything you need to know about property. By covering the entire journey from buying your home through to design, building, selling, and everything in between, we'll help you fill in the blanks and bring your property vision to life.
Welcome to Builderpedia. Today, a very special guest for a milestone episode. This is episode 40, and our regular guest and friend of Builderpedia, Matt Hayson, welcome.
G'day, Matt.
Matt Hayson is principal of Cobden Hayson and probably, arguably, the leading real estate agent in the West, with branches in as far as Earlwood one end and Drummoyne at the other. And any others that I don't know about, Matt?
Oh, Lane Cove's pretty good. Yeah, over into the dip into the north side.
Yeah. Well, welcome. Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, mate. Episode 40. Congratulations. That's good. Good effort.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, it snuck up on us. First thing, it was like, can we get to 10? And will we get to 10?
Yeah. I get it, mate. It's a big commitment doing these, so well done.
No, I love it. Love chatting to people like you. So let's get into it. The first things first, what the hell is going on in real estate in Sydney in March, April 2025? Where are we at and how did we get here?
Yeah, big question, right? So I think the hot topic, of course, has been through the February rate cut, which was the first after 13 increases, as everybody knows. I think there was a lot of people waiting with bated breath that rates would be cut, and they were. The interesting question post that is, well, what impact did it have on the market? And I think a lot of people were hoping that it would buoy buyer confidence and would return a little bit of enthusiasm into the market, and a lot of sellers probably, you know, caught on to that. And what we saw, though, and what's been really happening around Sydney, and I've been speaking with agents right up from, which I kind of mentioned off air, right through the Turramurra line, all the way down past Maroubra and the Northern Beaches line. And I'm hearing very much a consistent trend line right now that, in fact, surprisingly, the rate cut has had the reverse impact with buyers. And probably what we've been trying to isolate is why. And what we've seen, it's encouraged a lot of sellers to bring their home onto the market, thinking that it would have a positive impact with buyer sentiment. But as a result of that, more properties come on the market. It's somewhat, I wouldn't say flooded, but it's certainly diluted what was already a fairly weak buyer pool. So buyers now have more choice. And the other thing which it's probably done is it's encouraged some vendors, and this might come from as a surprise to many listeners, is they've added a little bit of extra GST onto the value of their own homes, which has magically arrived, thinking that with an interest rate cut, all of these buyers now have extra access to funding. But speaking with mortgage brokers, the reality is for pretty much every borrower, only about four of the banks have passed on the rate cut, whereas the other banks have actually just wound it into the borrower paying a little bit more principal rather than interest. So it's not really made a significant impact to their back pocket. And really, it's only a 4% differential. So on $1 million loan, it's really only adding $40,000 of borrowing power to a purchaser. So it's not a big impact in the overall market. So if anything, what we've found is the market post that rate cut has actually become far more challenging to get a deal done.
I missed the point you made on GST. What do you mean? What happened with GST?
You know, when I'm just using, I guess, the term. Vendors, I think, have got wrapped up in, there's been a lot of media hype. Oh, the rates have come down. Sydney's a resurgent market and all that. They're just adding a bit. And really, in some cases, legitimately, they're adding 10% or between 5 and 10%. Onto their expectations.
Yeah.
And that 5 or 10% doesn't exist in the market. If anything, the buy pool's probably going back 5 or 10%. And as a general kind of conversation, I know nobody ever likes to talk about falling property prices in Sydney because everybody thinks it's resilient and we're working in the best market in the country and all that type of thing. But reality is we are seeing some shifts of between 5 and 10% on values.
Downwards?
Yeah, downwards, downward pressure. Yeah,
yeah, easing. Yeah. As you called it, easing. I'm like falling, Matt, and you said it.
Yeah, adjusting.
Easing. I love
adjusting,
that.
Adjusting, yeah.
That's right. Such a real estate speak. And I guess we know that there's an election looming and we know that people wait till the election's done. I mean, even though, like, on the face of the difference isn't great. Is that a factor at all, do you think?
Look, no question. Yeah, we've seen it time and time again over the last several elections that it's a time of pause whenever you're making a big financial decision. You don't like a lot of uncertainty in the market. And we're seeing that already probably sneak a little bit into this year's market. We thought the election was going to be in April, then the cyclone hit and they paused the decision. So it now looks like it's going to be pushed into early May. But again, it's already consuming a lot of media attention and a lot of airtime for people. Not to mention, you've got all these other things unfolding around the world, from tariff wars to actual wars. You've got the share markets kind of come off 10%. I think they call it a technical correction in the share market as well. So there's plenty going around, which is quite disruptive for making a big financial decision. So now with the election, not only have that, we've got April, which is a very disrupted month as well, with school holidays, Easter rolls in the Anzac Day. Anybody that's working in the professional services would know, I think you can take 3 days off and it's a 12-day holiday.
Yeah, yeah. So, Easter and Anzac Day in the same week and school holidays.
The same week and school
You're
holidays.
You're all but shut down for that week, right? What are you going to get done in the 2 days before?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, right? So you've got already got sellers that are trying to get their campaigns done for the April 12 weekend, maybe even just before we break for the Easter Good Friday. So there's a lot of property on the market right now, but you've got all of this noise and news around and things like that. And as a result of that, what we're seeing is buy sentiment's pretty weak. The results are pretty reflective of that across the broader Sydney auction market. Tracking that data now, we've only had one weekend this year, and this is SQM Research's data. We've only had one auction weekend so far this year where it's actually just snuck over a 51% auction clearance rate for Sydney. That's the true clearance rate. That's the final clearance rate, not the one that you read in Domain on a Saturday. It just doesn't have all the covered data yet. This is the final one. They get released on a Tuesday afternoon. And then when you break down that particular data, so of the, say, last weekend, I think there was about 1,264 properties that went to auction across Sydney. Only about 24% of those sold actually under the hammer at auction. So I guess that gives your listener a bit of a view that you got 1,264 auctions. Only about 24% of them actually sell at auction.
Wow.
And then another 24% sold prior. So it gives you a sense that competitive tension isn't really there for the volume of property that's available across Sydney right now.
Yeah. So I guess amazing opportunity to buy.
It's a great opportunity.
Yeah. Yep. It's an insane market to be a buyer in. You can pick something up and take advantage of the fact that there's so much competition, and inevitably, some properties are left sitting, you know, left standing when the music stops. And when those people have to transact, they've got no choice. So yeah, some incredible investment opportunities, but there are anomalies as well. I mean, there's a property that sold recently, no views that I know of, not waterfront, landlocked property in the middle of Balmain, 8.5 million. And you're like, what is going on in that market? And also we had Vandenberg from Malfa, huge development in the Northwest Quarter in Northwestern Sydney, an hour away from Sydney. They just sold a penthouse apartment for $6.5 million, which is an apartment in Western Sydney. And you kind of go, what the hell is happening there? And I mean, they're absolutely killing it. And I think they're taking advantage of downsizers from Northwestern Sydney who don't want to have a house where they have to mow the lawn anymore, right? And that is an incredible part of the market. And we've seen Urban Core dipping their toe into Balmain, and I think that will surprise a lot of people because there's not many apartment developments, and I think some people will be shocked to see where they get to. It's a funny vibe in Sydney. So what?
It is a funny vibe.
What's going to happen next?
Well, yeah, this is the question, right? We talk about this internally within our office quite a lot, and your anomalies are right. And that's what's keeping somewhat of the hearing two very different messages in the market, right? So what I'm saying might be very unusual for your listeners to hear, because if you read the media, what I'm seeing and seeing in headlines, which is quite like for our consumers and vendors, quite confusing, because you're hearing, oh, the Sydney market is rebounding, property prices are rising. Now, property prices, according to CoreLogic, went up 0.6%. Now, it's hardly data worth reporting on, right? But that's now apparently rebounding and the Sydney market's back. So our vendors will hang on to such headlines and say, oh, well, that means I can hang on to my price or whatever it might be. But you look behind and for that one anomaly, which gets reported on in the Saturday Herald, that somebody turned up to an auction and paid $1 million more than everybody else. And that's really not a reflection of the broader market.
And that's something we're finding, Matt. Like I'm talking to people and they go like, well, the market's going up. And I'm like, I don't think it is. Are we in the same city affiliated with real estate overhypes things? And there's a perception that interest rate cut will result in market rising. And I'm like, no, I think I'm pretty sure the market's falling, but like it made me second guess with just the certainty that people go, yeah, no, no, the market's definitely going up. And I'm like, I don't think it is. Have you actually looked? Like, you know, so yeah, there's this wild disconnect, isn't it?
Big time. Yeah, well, I guess what we see from years and years and years of experience is people cherry pick what they want to see and they have a complete blockage, visual blockage to what's actually also happening as well. And it takes somebody very commercial to really look at the full data. And we've got examples of, so all the clients that are doing the best right now in the market, and it's a conversation we're having with anybody going to sale right now, is where the conversation is, if you're anchored to a price, which is I must get X in order to sell or otherwise I'm not selling, do not sell in this market because the market is not working or operating at any level whatsoever on we'll just give you what you want. It's a true defining, as a lot of people say, coming, bring your home to market can be quite humbling because we all think we miss the faults of our own homes and we always upgrade the positives are. But on the flip side, buyers tend to magnify the negatives going into a purchase and probably lesser onto the positives. So we've got a market now, which is probably, and this is talking to agents in our business that have been with us for 20 plus years, it's probably a market where we're seeing the widest disconnect between what a vendor wants and where the buyer market is. It's probably one of the greatest disparities that we've seen in a long, long while. And how that's evolved is, I don't know, maybe it's just this long term of, you know, a lot of mortgage holders shouldering this burden of high interest rates over a period now since 2022. There's been lots of chat that last year that rates were going to come down and then it got pushed back to beginning of this year. And just that one rate cut where a lot of people are obviously holding on and said, right, this is our window. Let's dump the property. And we need X in order to reflush our cash accounts and cash flow. But sadly, the response from the buyer pool is just not that high.
What properties are doing the best? I mean, last time we chatted, well, almost 9 months ago, it was properties ready for renovation weren't doing very well. Newly renovated properties were in demand. So has that changed? And what are the dynamics now? What's in demand? What's left on the shelf?
So the A-grade properties are still doing the best. So right layout, right street, right aspects. With any certain area, it's the right space of land, it's got parking or whatever, it might have a view. So the best of the best in an area, right? So take Bow Land, for example, you know the streets very well. Anything that's in one of the blue ribbon streets that's not quite well renovated, the layout's quite good, they're all doing exceptionally well. But it also comes back to the baseline, which the vendor needs to also be realistic. Now, the people that are doing the best are those sellers which are very commercial about, listen, let's just put a great campaign in play. Whatever the market outcome is the market outcome, and they're having great success. Your B-grade and C-grade stuff. So your B-grade stuff, it's in still a good street, but might have some compromises, i.e. the layout might not be quite right or it's just tilted in the wrong aspect or whatever it might be. Still quite good, but those vendors probably need to be a little bit more willing to kind of negotiate on price around the edges. And your C-grade stuff, which is the busy streets, the poor layout, the wrong aspect, everything like that, they're super struggling and need to be heavily discounted. Your renovated versus unrenovated, still very much the same as maybe 9 months ago. There's a wide acceptance that building costs haven't come down. They are what they are and it's expensive. So you've either got to buy really, really well to absorb that additional cost on the upside, or they're struggling. The appetite to purchase fully unrenovated properties is on the lower side now, unless it's extremely good value.
And what about rentals? I guess that's the X factor. I guess are end most vendors selling investment properties, or is there any trend you can see there?
For sure. Yep. So a lot of investors are getting out of the property market. So even today, actually, legislation came into play now, which is for tenants, you can have no longer given no reason eviction notice. Eviction notices also have to be longer. So i.e. the tenant that's in there can stay longer to find a new home. So there's a whole range of things from the investor market that's been a little bit negative for them in terms of land tax has gone through the roof over the last 2 years to the point where a lot of clients are saying to us, holding this asset doesn't make a lot of sense now. Not to mention then you've got your insurance costs, what was your cash rate and interest rates have gone up through the roof. Then you've got layers and layers now of additional tenancy legislation. So it's getting quite difficult to navigate through that space as well. So as a result of that, look, and we've also got this retiring age group to your point with the client that just sold for 6.5 million. we've got this baby boomer generation who did buy a lot of investment properties and held them and thought, like, we're talking to a lot of those clients now. They're saying, look, I just don't need this headache anymore. It's too difficult. The yields are low. May as well put it into shares where it's liquid. I can get in and out of it a lot easier. So there's a bit of that going on, which has been pretty interesting. On the rental side of things, though, the markets, we went through that phase. Maybe it was not where there was queues and queues of people lining up to get a rental accommodation. That then died off through the back end of last year. It's now gone back to somewhat of a bit of a neutral market where you still need to price your rental property correctly, but you'll get a tenant within a couple of weeks. But it's not queues and queues and 10 applications per property anymore. It's gone back to a more neutral kind of environment.
So what's happening broadly? Because we haven't built any more properties. Have we got less population, I guess, or less people coming? So what's happening? Because housing crisis, properties prices falling, it's counterintuitive, right? You think in a shortage, prices should be rising. And I guess part of the explanation is they were overpriced, like they were just overhyped, overpriced to begin with. What are the other forces that we haven't talked about yet driving the property market?
Yeah, so the big one that we constantly hear and talk about is affordability. So whether or not you're buying or renting, everybody's watching cash flow right now. So that just seems this cost of living, which has gone on now for a few years with high inflation. And the inflation numbers obviously tell one part of the story. But if you're out in reality, when they're saying groceries have gone up 15%, but you're going down and it feels like your shopping has gone up 50%, like there's real challenges there. And that's what we're seeing both on the buy side and the rental side. So on the rental accommodation, what we've seen is a lot of people move around and either downscale their accommodation or they've gone and grouped into different groups and kind of said, well, look, I can maintain the same house or get something bigger, but let's get two or three other tenants that can supplement the rent. So we've seen a lot of that kind of unfold over the last 9 months or so. And again, that's probably why we've seen that this rebalancing in the market right now is I think everybody's looked at their cash flow position, done a little bit of forecasting and said, we can't continue in this thread of what we're doing. So let's make some decisions now about all of that. And that's what we've seen now. It's probably starting to even out and balance out now. And the rental pricing is somewhat subdued a little bit now. Like we're not seeing any real major rental growth. And you're right. Normally one's going up and the other's going down. And conversely with, you know, property prices for sale or rent, right now they seem to be trending in a very similar direction. And it all comes down from what we can gather is cash flow and affordability for. When we look at sales pricing, September, October 2021 was the peak of the market in Sydney and was the highest price ever achieved. We then went through a bit of a roller coaster up and down. And then when rates started to jack up quite quickly, we went for a bit of a downward trend. But we've clawed our way back to that trend line of 2021. Your A-grade properties are surpassing those numbers. But generally, for a lot of properties that traded in 2021-22, we're now just back at neutral. And if for some people that maybe went a bit hard in that period, we're actually now below. We've just seen this rebalancing it following that crazy COVID period, which just shot things kind of out to the moon a bit.
Yeah, and it's that part of the explanation is that divide that I spoke to Alan Kohler about a few episodes ago, that where there's the haves and the have not. The property owners have control a lot of the wealth. And if you're a property owner with a bit of cash, you're doing very well at the moment with interest rates being higher. So yeah, there's a real divide that's doing odd things. That disparity is doing odd things to the market is my read on it. But where's population in all of this? I don't know if you've followed the trend in, because it's been a little bit subdued, but I think there's been a bit of a funny shift. It's been deprioritized as a big federal election or at least subdued. But I think there's a worldwide trend of falling population. I listened to a great podcast YouTube channel, Patrick Boyle, or I can't remember the name of the, it's something, it's Patrick Boyle, I think, is the name that you need to remember, but very good financial commentator and unpacks a lot of the wackiness around tariffs. He did an episode recently on the fact that world population is trending down and falling, and we've all built an economic system based on population growth. So, are we in danger of falling prices and not enough people? Like, is that a danger? And how far are we from that?
No. It's I know. So Ben Fordham was reporting on it the other day, saying that the influx of immigration, I think it's 4-1 on natural births in the country at the moment. So I think we're still pretty trending pretty high for immigration, but Musk talks about that a lot. So saying this global population isn't that, it's, we're falling, you know, countries should be, people should be having more babies if we're to sustain ourselves. I think Japan's been falling for decades now, and you can kind of see the result there. So I don't know. I mean, Sydney's probably, we're probably a funny country in the sense of we're so migrated to the east coast of Australia, aren't we, that we don't have houses from here to Western Australia. It's pretty densely populated in and saturated in a small little pocket of areas, but it's a hard one to know. That's above my pay grade, Matt.
Yeah,
to
yeah,
know
yeah.
Where but the trends are going to go.
Now, is that a factor in property price at the moment?
Well, look, obviously, you know, what comes into effect too on the 1st of April is no foreigners can buy Australian real estate for 2 years unless it's a new build. So that's an interesting thing that the government's kind of gone there. I'm sure there'll be probably workarounds that people will probably weasel their way into figuring out at some point. But
and it was never a huge factor. It's overblown in terms of the fabled investor who drives up and distorts the property market. But actually, when you look at the portion of foreign-owned properties, it's not a lot. It's not enough to substantially drive the market, right? It's a very bit of a political reaction rather than anything that's going to lead to any substantial change.
I mean, look at our micro market here through the Balmain area. Like I've always argued that what props up our market is the underpinning of the locals who love the area so much that they'll often represent 60% of the buy pool by upgrading and moving sideways or whatever it might be. So in some ways, they naturally kind of keep the market up because they have to sell their existing home to buy that other home in the same area. And everybody wants a certain kind of price point within a margin of 5% or so. So it kind of underpins the market. And I guess that's how like a lot of areas work, you know, be it through the eastern suburbs. I mean, people tend to be quite tribal in their locations. Certainly as you move up the price points, you know, you kind of stick to where you know, where your local roots are and where you navigate around and your life kind of lifestyle revolves. So we see that. In fact, all the markets that we tend to operate in, it's largely underpinned by good local interest, which for most markets might represent 50% of the sales. So what you do need is in every local area is you need a good portion of the population to be successful and continue to be doing well to kind of keep those property prices propped up. Unless, of course, which we always talk about, everybody just said, hey, let's all collectively drop our values proportionately by 20%. So it looks more affordable for everybody and the banks take a haircut and we all just get on with life 20% below where current things are.
If you're a vendor right now thinking to sell, is there an action plan? Is there a strategy? Or are you sort of going, well, if you can wait, let's pitch it middle of the road. So not quite A grade, quite C grade, say good, reasonable B grade. So something that has not in the best street, but not on a bus route in the worst street and, you know, not the worst layout, but maybe some little bit of dysfunction, but not a good property, reasonable quality.
Yeah, good property. Yeah, for sure. Look, no one's, as you know, Matt, you've been doing this a long time. No one ever picks the bottom of the market or the top of the market. So I guess it's your first things first is why are you selling? What's your motivation? Like, have you got somewhere to go? And so let's assume that the motivation is that they've got to go for a reason. They want to look at another house to purchase or they've purchased another property. So in that instance, look, it's fine to come to market. Look, there are buyers. There's plenty of people who put traffic through open homes, in online inquiries, all of that kind of red flag stuff's quite decent. I think the thing for any seller right now is to ensure that they do all of the basics right. So you want to make sure that you get your presentation right. You've got to look at your market and what's in competition on the market right at that point in time and make sure that you come to market well presented and also well priced in comparison to those other properties. I think it's important as well just to watch because right now, the challenging thing is we've got is a lot of agents will look at pricing right now and probably overinflate things to win business. But it's important for every seller, I think, to be very, very cautious and realistic about where their pricing would be. I would very much recommend right now that most people, if you get a range or a window from an agent, which is what most people will provide, 2 to 2.2 or 2 to 2.3, whatever it might be, I'd probably do all of your numbers on the baseline number and maybe even just to be safe, do it even marginally less than that so that you know that when you go into it, you've got a fallback position depending on if the feedback's not where you want it to be. So then you do everything right, you know, so make sure you set everything up, make sure you've got a good guide on it that gets that foot traffic quite high. And then you're going to have to pick the eyes out of how you strategize about selling. Now, when you look at the data, I know here in Balmain, for example, only about 14% of what's listed for auction actually sells under the hammer. So when you know that kind of stat, it's pretty important to think, okay, the best strategy for me right now is probably finding one or two key buyers and doing a deal within the first couple of 2 to 3 weeks. Now, I'd be going in with that mindset, set the guide right, aim for 2 to 3 week kind of campaign and try and get it done prior. That would be probably the advice we'd be providing right now.
Yeah, and strategic guiding. If you've overshot the guide, very hard to then pare back. The whole thing becomes very awkward, right? Reducing your initial guide means that market confidence is in your campaign is a little bit shot, isn't it? You're backpedaling. Some developers and bargain hunters will move in going, oh, yeah, this is interesting. But serious buyers will be like, well, this is a bit weird. Where are we at? And a little bit confused. And the signal is that, I mean, from a buyer perspective, it's amazing. Yeah, if I see a price guide adjusted, my ears would prick up as a buyer. But certainly from the broader market, it's a signal that something's wrong with that property. Something's wrong with that campaign and sometimes it's subconscious, right? If you're an astute buyer and you get good advice and you've got that info up your sleeve and you know there's nothing wrong with it and the rest of the market thinks there's something wrong with it, you're in a pretty strong position. So as a buyer, I guess, what's your best strategy? I flag one strategy, find the things that are struggling.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you're right. So what's interesting now if you're a buyer, and this is a hard thing to explain to vendors right now, is about 60% of what's on the market right now is actually seeing price reductions. So if you're a buyer, you're seeing this unfold right around the market and around the properties which you like. So it's, for a vendor, it's a bit disconcerting because the buyers are looking at it going, okay, well, if 60% of what I'm looking at is seeing a price reduction through the course of the campaign, how accurate is this particular price guide going to be? So that's what's kind of keeping buyers back on their heels a little bit from jumping in and making an offer very quickly. So as a result of that, we're actually seeing a lot of guides lower even further when they come to market now, just in order to kind of attract buyer interest. So I guess the key thing for a buyer right now is to be really acutely aware. Like the one good thing that you do have is you've got quite a lot of stock on the market and you've got a good trend line now of you've got a multiple months of this year's kind of market activity to see what's been selling. So you can have a look at, I mean, the data is pretty good now, like on realestate.com and domain, you've got everything that's traded. You can look at what they sold for. I mean, one of the big things that we look at a lot is we look at the internal square meterage, rate per square meter for internal. We look at rate per square meter for land. And then you might look at the combined average of those two. So for example, if you're looking at a range of 2 million or 2.5, I'd look at everything that's traded at $2.5 million, probably over the last 6 months, and have a look at all of the things from the trend lines, from rate per square meter for land, rate per square meter internal. Look if they've seen some averages and then look at the quality of those renovations, why some got a little bit more. So then you get really comfortable so that when you go in to see a property, you know, you've got a very good knowledgeable idea of where pricing should sit and whether or not the guide's correct or whether or not, you know, if you want to make an offer, where that should sit. So I think that's probably the key thing is actually spending the time doing that data research. It's important.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of other sort of curveballs happening. Like we've been inundated with inquiries, Ballast Point, like we're absolutely flat out. We're dealing with inquiries and it's people who have come out of the other side of the price shock, right? Because for a labor intensive project, inner west, inner east, it doesn't matter. So whether you're in Paddington or Balmain or like those labor where you have to walk a lot of things in and out, prices have all but doubled, right? From pre-COVID to now. And a lot of it's driven by labor cost and the labor content of a project. But we're sensing that people are just needed time to get over the fact that things are just more expensive. Like the fact that, whatever, milk's more expensive. Well, I don't know. We're not a household that buys a lot of milk. But, you know, some things are substantially more expensive. I guess fruit and veg and other things have definitely gone up. And it just takes time for people to come round to it. And we're finding that when people have just got over it, they're kind of going, well, do I really want to pay stamp duty and go through the pain? And so we're seeing an uptick in activity in people just going, you know, I'm over living in this sort of state. I've let it, you know, some houses we're seeing, it's like, yeah, we haven't really done anything in the last, since early COVID or even some places for 10 years. And they're like, it's time. So that feels like it's shifted a little bit, but we're a microcosm, right? We're a tiny part of Sydney and a tiny part of that market. So, yeah, I guess I'm wondering if something's flipping. But the other thing that's really interesting that's happening is a lot of DAs have been parked. So a lot of development applications were just not viable in the owner's mind, right? In the early 2020s, 2021, 2022, they've got a DA done and then they've got some quotes back, or they've had a costing or interest rates started heading up and they've parked it. And there's a 5-year limit to substantial commencement on a DA. So we're finding that some of those things are coming home to roost, where they're like, well, we fought hard to get this DA across the line. We're not willing to let it go. So we're finding that we're getting that, and people are just going, well, prices aren't coming down. We're just going to have to deal with it and suck it up. Or maybe they're doing less than they originally envisaged. So we're seeing this sort of funny trend, whereas last year nothing happened. Everyone sat on their hands and didn't want to commit one way or the other. There is a shortage of properties that are ready and renovated, I think, still. So they're sort of looking at their house, looking at what they, in a depressed market, people are finding that their property's not up to scratch. So they're going to spend a bit of money on transacting out of one and into another and paying stamp duty, and their property in a market that's flat isn't going to be appealing to the market. That trend where people don't want to know and just want a better property and don't want the risk of development, we've seen it coming around. And I'm wondering if you've seen any evidence of that.
For sure. So there's a couple of trends, right? So and this is probably a reflection of that higher cost of everything. So we've been trading a lot of properties which were bought in 2021 and 22, and people have been caught out with those higher costs. So that's one trend line that we see, probably a big portion of the market. I haven't done the stats on it, but it might represent 20% of the market, maybe even a bit more of people that bought in that time. Then to your point about the DAs, we see a lot of people that have got the DAs, to your point, and we run the numbers quite a lot for people. The general rule of thumb that we see is that for what the property would sell at for today's value, plus the likely build cost of that DA, they'd be probably just breaking even. So, i.e., bought a house for $3 million, you've got a DA, it's going to cost you $1 million. Yeah, when you're finished, the house is probably worth $4 million. So that's where a lot of people kind of sit and they go, okay, well, I'm not making money, I'm not losing money, but do I look at something for $4 million and save myself the headache of doing it? And so that's an ongoing conversation we have with a lot of people. Whereas there's other people which were maybe bought pre-2020 and they've got DAs, but they've got good equity in their house, right? So they might have bought the house for $3 million. The house is now worth $4 million, and then they've got the DA that will make it turn it into a $5 million house or whatever it might be. And you kind of look at that and go, gee, in your instance, it makes sense because you can stay there longer term. You've got good equity in it. Something went wrong, you could sell the property and still make a decent profit out of it. So yeah, it's been an interesting thing with that ongoing build costs and the trigger points of what makes people want to go ahead with them and otherwise. And yeah, a lot of people will pare it back what they originally got, but yeah, I can't see that changing anytime soon, as you know, Matt. Like, it's the costs aren't coming down now. I mean, they are what they are.
Yeah, and people have just got over it in some ways. I mean, there's some people still stuck in the past, they're still saying, well, can you build it for my budget, $5,000 to $6,000 a square meter? And I'm just like, well, no, it used to be that. Now it's right. 10. Like,
and would you say, Matt, where we see a lot of is still, I mean, you're good because you're the one-stop shop with architecture drafts and people and that type of thing. But we're still seeing some disconnect where we meet the client, they haven't spoken to a builder yet, and they say, oh, the architect says we can do this for, you know, $500,000. And we're looking at the DA and we're going, God, they're ripping the back of the house off and they're doing it. We're looking at it going, this looks more like a $1.2 million build. Are you still finding that there's a lot of architects that haven't kind of caught up to what's actually happening, or they rightly or wrongly just don't tell the client the truth because they won't go ahead with the DA or anything? Do you see that?
I think some architects were never really had a handle on price to begin with, but I don't like to bag architects, but I think there is a problem which we've discovered early on when we pivoted from being a construction contract business to doing architecture. And the problem is that most clients have unreasonable expectations. And because we have to build it, we don't always get it right. Sometimes, particularly during COVID, we had some wild fluctuations and we didn't always do a great job at predicting what the price was. And at one point, I actually made a point to tell my clients, I don't know what's happening and I don't know where it's heading because we're getting ridiculous things, ridiculous fluctuations in labor and material, and I really have lost touch. There was a time there where I was fully disconnected from where the market was getting. And I think most builders were, and some of them were more disconnected than others and paid a high price, and a lot of them went bust. But I'm finding that there's a conundrum there for an architecture practice because a lot of their billing happens before they get to a price. They're not dishonest, they're over-optimistic. But it's hard. It's a very hard position to be in because if you don't roll with it, then you lose the job, you lose your earnings. I guess for us, I took a very hard position. So we kill a lot of jobs. When we finish concept stage, we price it before we prepare a DA. A lot of people don't get to a price until they've got a DA. So we kill a lot of projects before they even go to a DA. Last year, we probably killed half of them, and hugely painful, but necessary. Yes, what you're saying is true. That definitely happens. I don't think it's just plain old dishonesty. I think it's a rock and a hard place for some practices that don't have a lot of work and need to feed their staff. But there is a culture of babying things along and hoping for the best. Yeah, definitely there. The other thing I've noticed is actually Inner West are not as bad as everyone thinks. And there's uncertainty in time. That's the biggest uncertainty. How long will it take? And will it sit on someone's desk who then goes on sabbatical, who then passes it to someone who leaves for another job in private practice? And you can get passed around and stuck with a development application. But we're finding that there's a big gray area between actually which DAs fail because of council and which DAs were always going to fail. And no chance.
Yeah, just poor design.
Poor design, poor decisions, poor documentation, or just poor development strategy. So we're actually going, the more we do in Inner West, the more we do in the East and Inner Northwest, as they call it, Lane Cove and that area, you know, we find that actually councils are not so bad. North Sydney is terrible at the moment. They've got all sorts of problems. They're quite reliable in how you can predict what you're going to get. So it's over enthusiasm and it's poor, sometimes just poor planning or poor planning strategy. But council is an easy person or entity to blame. It's a little bit of an out for a lot of architects to go, well, oh, this council is terrible. But you kind of look at what they've designed and how they've proposed it and what they've done, and you just go, never going to fly the way you've presented it or the way you've planned it. Like, it was always going to be problematic. So I guess that's definitely a huge factor. The other thing I found, DAs have become more valuable because, and I'm not sure why, but I found that I think a year ago, no one cared whether your house had a DA because no one could afford to do anything. But we're finding a pattern of people who, because we reach out to buyers who have bought a house with a DA that we've done, our client has pulled the pin and sold the house before building it. And we're finding that they're very happy that there is a DA, even if it doesn't exactly suit their needs. It's a signal that something's possible. So, and particularly with dysfunctional places, gives people confidence. So we're finding that actually selling your house with a DA, I guess if you think about it, gives you an edge in the market. If you're looking at two properties side by side, even if you're not selling to developers, it gives that property an edge. Lets people see, even if they're not going to go through with that DA, opening up that possibility is beneficial, I think.
Yeah. Look, I think everybody looks at the house and wants to unlock potential, right? So I think a DA is definitely valuable. And I guess in this current, what we see environment is, to your point, somebody's taken time to battle through this. And that might be not only with the council, but whatever comes up with cropping up with neighbours' complaints and reservations and all that. So you've had to, most people would probably know, if you're in the urban fringe of Sydney, there's been somewhat of an arm wrestle to get that DA done. So not just with the architect, but with the council, with the neighbours, and all those things. And there's some value attached to that. So even if the client is likely to do it, you can say there's definitely a value add to pass on.
Yeah, absolutely. So Matt, to wrap up, what's next? We've touched on it before, but what's your prediction for end of 2020? We're going to have an election. Something's going to happen.
Yeah, we've got the election, obviously. Yeah. Look, it'd be good to see the election out of the way and just see if that kind of gets a lot of bandwidth that people absorbs, people just gets people back to neutral and operating again. Look, from a market to pick up perspective, from what we're seeing, just at the affordability and financial constraints, I think we probably need another 2 to 3 rate cuts before we would see any material impact on the property market moving forward that's of any noticeable volume, and that's price and level. So I think the employment rates came through. They weren't looking particularly crash hot, so there's some talk that rates may come down again, but it's a double-edged sword, isn't it, rates? It means if rates are coming down, the rest of the economy is not looking particularly healthy. So whilst it might bolster your back pocket, those in that housing sector, overall economy signs are probably not that good. That said, traditionally, when rates go down, eventually the market does recover. And if we look at the longevity over the time period, so the last 30 years, whenever there's been a market downturn, it's normally been on average about 18 months. This is a weird time from 2021, 22 to now, when you consider that a lot of properties are back at 2021 pricing. So look, I'd like to think the market will stabilize and will probably trend water for the remainder of this, at least the next 6 months, until we start seeing more rate cuts come through and that flush through the economy and people's cash flows kind of start to improve. So yeah, I don't see any major material change until that happens, but we might get little upticks with an election over. That might have a little bit of a sugar hit. The first interest rate cut had a 2-week sugar hit. The beginning of the year when people came back enthusiastic, that had a sugar hit. So within the market, there's little windows where there's a 2-week uptick and 2 weeks of flat. So I suspect we're just going to trend along in that kind of environment for the next little while.
There's a complicated set of circumstances, and between one thing we talked about is baby boomers cashing out and having more liquid things as a factor, and there's so many things happening, and we'll see what happens. But I think long and the short is high quality, good properties are always going to do well, and C grade properties might struggle, particularly in this sort of market. So Matt Hayson, thanks so much for joining us, and really appreciate your time and love your.
Mate, always a pleasure, Matt. Good to be here.
You've been listening to Buildopedia. Please remember to like us and share our episode with your friends. We'd love your comments and suggestions. And we have a new website, buildopedia.au, where you can get in touch or leave a question and check out our blog.